And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. Well, Patty, we're back, and I had to open up this episode with just another little brief taste of the intro of the Pleasure Seekers' first Side A single from Mercury Records, Light of Love. Oh, I just love it. It's so catchy. We closed out the last episode playing it in full after your very exciting, for me, emotional DJ-style intro to the Pleasure Seekers' first single. And we discussed how this song was selected by Mercury Records after some trial runs. So if you didn't hear that episode, go back. But ultimately, Light of Love became Side A, and Side B became Good Kind of Hurt. Now, I love Good Kind of Hurt, but I think, tell me what you think, but I think the decision was correct about Light of Love as the first single. I mean, it's catchy. But I also wanted to pick up on something, and clearly this, I shouldn't say clearly, I'm sure this wasn't done back then because female empowerment, this is still 1968, it was a little new back then. But I think it's so cool that Carol Bayer, at this young, unknown songwriter, staff songwriter, was chosen as the first single for this young, unknown female rock and roll band. I mean, how cool is that? I just love that connection. And again, I'm sure that wasn't even thought of at the time, but the other two staff writers for the songs were males. And so I just think it's really cool. And I'm wondering if you have any additional thoughts about the song or anything since we last spoke.
Well, it was very cool that a woman wrote it with her partner, George. And they came up with that for this new all girl. I mean, you got to remember, we didn't have a lot of times right at that moment. Some of these bands Mercury were doing, they had a little bit of a name. They were, you know, whatever. We were brand new. We were only known by our reputation and our and word of mouth and stuff. And here we go, and we get Carol Bayer Sager, who, my God, the woman's won a Grammy, a Tony, every award you could ever name through her legacy. So, yeah, I think we were in pretty damn good company. It's pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing. And also what your legacy would go on to become. I mean, I just think that's cool. The Pleasure Seekers and Carol Bayer at the time. She wasn't married then.
Right.
Well, one of the things that you had said on the previous episode about Light of Love and why it was chosen is that it had a pop sound to it. And I agree with you on this assessment. It's lighter. It's like a teen bop song. And I think that really underscored this idea of this young, youthful, you were teenagers, some of you. You were still very young. And I thought that what was interesting is that when I was listening to this, but before we get to the Side B single, I have a curiosity question for you. You did record in 1964 for the first time.
Yes.
And then you recorded for The Hideout, as we talked about, in 65 and then released in 66. So you do have a few songs before these singles come out on Mercury.
Yes.
Now, did you incorporate them into your sets? Were you performing some original? And then did you start to perform Light of Love?
Yes, we did all of the songs in our set. Of course, we love to do the one that got shelved. You know, that was our favorite because it was a funky, cool song. But yeah, we did them. I mean, it was our third, fourth time with the one we had just done in a studio, the Vanilla Fudge one. So we had a little bit of experience. And yeah, we did them. We did them all.
Well, you had said, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you had said that the third one, and I just want to clarify, that the third one, which was not put on Side A or Side B, was Locked in Your Love.
Right.
And I definitely want to give that song its props at the end of this episode, because I'm with you. I think it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
With that said, I also think Light of Love was a perfect entree to the audiences to introduce this band. But I do now want to talk about the Side B version, song, which is Good Kind of Hurt. And we talked a little bit about this on the last episode. Actually, more than a little bit. But I want to go into depth and I want to listen to it a little bit. But this was the B-side. Darlene's vocals on this, Darlene is the drummer, but her vocals on this is just phenomenal and so different than Susie's. That's not a put down, but it really illuminates why the guys at Mercury and even maybe Dick Corby wanted to hear the different vocal styles that you had in order to decide what would be the
Yes.
most exciting sound.
Yes.
So I do want to listen to the song, Good Kind of Hurt. But before we do, please tell us about the song, the arrangement, Dar's vocals, the band's performance on it, anything you want us to listen to as we go into it.
Okay. Well, after the DJ's dig pick, Light Up Love, it was called the Turntable Hit. That's what they chose. But the Good Kind of Hurt was meant to be a bigger orchestral type ballad, and it was beautifully done. Darlene did such a knockout job singing it, and she had a different tone and feel to her voice. You know, this is not to demean the early band in any way, but Mary Lou, you know, all the other girls we had, they came from the choir days. Darlene had an actual fabulous voice. She would have been the one doing those Motown girl ones, you know, and Darlene's voice elevated those types of songs when we did them in our sets, because she was a very good singer. She just had a really nice tone to her voice, too. And she added a lot to the Pleasure Seeker Band. And the arrangement was done very big band and so well done. And, you know, Kenny Rogers did the song after we did with his first edition, whatever. And again, Kenny, I mean, his legacy is so well known too, Kenny Rogers, for God's sakes. But when I listen to the two of them side by side, I have to say, I mean, Darlene knocked it out of the park compared to that version, in my humble opinion. And I'm honest about that stuff. There's many songs that come down the pike that are a redo of somebody. And I'll be as blasphemous as I can. If I like the new one better, I'll say so. Better than the original. And I know that's sort of like, huh, you know, that band wrote it. But I'm just an honest person. I think Darlene did a better job than Kenny in the end result. And his was released on Reprise. Frank Sinatra had started that label. I mean, I have to correct what I said about songwriters. I don't know if the Mercury songwriters were exclusive to Mercury, because our songs did get repeated, okay, on a different label. And there was a trick people did back then with the publishing. You know, you could be a writer and you could get it to different labels too. So there's a whole thing behind that that was going on in the industry. But that's what happened. We got it first from the people that wrote it. It was a great song. Bob Stone. Yeah.
Well, without further ado, I really want to listen to it. Let's listen to everything that you talked about. But I want to emphasize, as you said, Darlene's vocals on this, because there is a sensuality, a maturity to her vocals. And I do think that in the end, maybe that's why the song wasn't selected as your first entree into the music world as a teen girl band. It's really intense and beautiful. So let's listen to Good Kind of Hurt, Side B, off of Mercury Records by the Pleasure Seekers. I love this song. All of you sound so tight. I keep saying this. Darlene's vocals are very special. Again, very different than Susie's, whose vocals are very special. But she really brings a richness to talents of talents to this band. I mean, not only was she just signed as getting a sponsorship from Slingerland and playing double bass drums, and now she's singing in this way. I'm just so curious. Please talk about Dar here again. I want to hear about it.
I thought she had a very sensual voice on this song, and some of the words were like almost double meaning, good kind of hurt. I mean, come on. But she just had that tonal quality that was so well done at that era, in a lot of the good vocal groups, girls from Motown and stuff, they had that too. Darlene had that kind of voice, and she sang very rich. That's what I loved. And I thought she did a fabulous job on that song. She brought a lot of emotion to it, knocked it out of the park.
She really did. I keep the word that keeps coming to mind, and it's not necessarily that brilliant, but there was a maturity to her delivery,
Yes.
her phrasing, the way, and you're right. I mean, I think it's a little bit more than a double entendre of meaning. I mean, sometimes it was just in your face, sexual.
It was.
Well, you also mentioned previously, and we did talk about this, but I want to tease it out a little bit. So this is a big deal. You're signed to Mercury. You have now two singles are coming out, and you did pick Light of Love with Susie on vocals versus Good Kind of Hurt with Dar's vocals. And you said that the grandmother, which we had to say, Lily Weaver, who is Dar's grandmother, and also the band's costumer, and she too had been in showbiz. So she was pretty savvy, but it was her granddaughter, and she was protective. So tell us a little bit more about this trouble in paradise.
Oh yeah, it happened. All three sides were very professionally done. Everybody was excited, and she was just supporting her granddaughter, who was in fact a terrific singer and had done a great job on the song. It just wasn't quite as popular. And really, Dar was absolutely firm. Her grandmother wanted her to quit. She got so upset. Oh, what happened? Why didn't they choose you? And Dar was like, no, she wasn't going to leave the band. It was just stupid. She likely felt a little bit bad that her song didn't get chosen, Darlene, but she understood the data. She was no dummy. Lily, in the end, she had to just leave it alone. She loved showbiz, but honestly, it was not her skill set to be able to take the DJ info coming back to the label and all that. She couldn't pick the single. I mean, that wasn't in her, the Suits did that, and Corby, and so she had to just deal with it. And Darlene realized that. Darlene knew that.
So I don't want to cause any trouble here because I understand and I'm sure you're right. But I do have to question Dar and Lily in the sense of you're three quattro sisters in the Pleasure Sisters, and you had founded the band. And Lily Weaver was the one who sought you out for Darlene when she wanted to leave the band, the Lorelais, because Lily knew how top notch the Quattro family was, let alone the Pleasure Seekers. So, do you though wonder, or did you ever wonder if she thought, that's awfully convenient that Susie got the vocals and not Darlene?
I think that Lily always was supporting her daughter and moving her up a step. To be honest, I saw Lily out when I picked up Darlene and wanted the card from Lily, but Lily was passing it over real quick. Oh, yeah, hi, you're Patty Quantrill, blah, blah. She knew about the band, so she was right there when I did approach her way back and steal her from the Lorelais. Lily was right there. Let's go, Dar. Let's join the Quattro people, so it was like a thing that just came together organically. But she might have thought that for a second because there were three Quattros in it and all that. But I wasn't surprised. It didn't go on very long. It was a quick thing. It was a little bit of but it was over with because Dar wasn't having it. I mean, Dar understood the DJ data, and you couldn't make this up. That's what they were getting. It was becoming the turntable hit, and people were wanting to hear it. Plain and simple. So that's what happened.
Well, and also, and again, this is not to throw her a bone, if you will, but it was side B of the single. So, and unlike the third single, which never got released. So at least, and we all know famously some side B songs were better than side A.
Always.
And in this case, I think both are fantastic. I also, just to put a little pin in it, I think that it really, side A and side B shows your range as a band. Because it's not cookie cutter, it's not the same sound, it wasn't filler or any of that. Now, on this third song that was shelved called Locked in Your Love, you had said that this was your favorite, this was the band's favorite, hands down, but that Dick Corby, who absolutely supported you and really wanted you to succeed, felt that Susie's vocals on it were too low. So, first of all, remind us a little bit about the song Locked in Your Love, who wrote it. Just talk about it a little bit.
Was written by Jerry Ross and Mort Shuman, two other guys that have a legacy, won awards through their, writing. I mean, they were so well known. And it was this very funky, cool song. And Susie did such a great job on it. It was more in our wheelhouse of the kind of stuff we like doing, plain and simple. Corby thought so too. And in the end, I think he was more mad at himself that he had not raised the key for Susie, in looking back, because, he came to think it really should have been up one key. And I mean, same as Chin and Chapman raising Susie's voice later in England, it's an excitement factor. So Corby missed that, and he was mad at himself, but he knew that he had to be honest in trying to decide which song should be the A side. So he had to walk that tightrope. I think it was very hard for him. And honestly, when I listen to it, I don't think it's too low. I could care less. I think it's great. I think she sounds great. But that's my opinion, And that is the song we prefer to play live.
Well, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to say what you just said, I agree with. I mean, who am I? But I agree that I love Susie's vocals on the song. I don't think her voice is too low on this. Also, her voice sounds exactly the same on Light of Love. I don't really hear that much of a key change difference. So I don't understand that decision. But the other question I have for you, and we are going to close out this episode listening to it for everybody, because it's except for your retrospective. It was not released at the time, but when you talk about it was your fave and that it really suited you, the one thing that I have is to ask, excuse me, is the staff writers in this case for Locked in Your Love, to me, but you tell me, really took in your Detroit roots and this Motown feel. And I feel that that was a fantastic nod to your musical roots. And I'm wondering if you noticed that at the time. Did you include this Motown feel to it? Backup vocals? I just would like to hear your thoughts.
Oh, just the whole thing. The minute it starts, you know that it's more pleasure seeker. I mean, as we're listening, you'll hear it just starts in the right attitude, Of course, we liked it the best. I mean, doing a ballad is wonderful, and she did it great. And Light of Love was much more pop oriented. We got the whole thing. We got it. So we had to go along. The money stays with the studios. They make the decisions. You play ball, or you never get to do your own written songs, originals. That's the way the system worked. So, we were happy to be signed and having a record coming out. So there you go.
Well, I love this song. I love all of your songs. I'm so happy we are finally at the part in this season where we get to play some pleasure seekers. And so I want to tease our listeners about what is to come, because just because Mercury Records has released your singles does not mean we are even close to the end of this
Oh no.
fairy tale.
Oh no.
So I want the listeners to know that as we are still on this wild and crazy ride, foot on the gas, as you would say, we are really going full steam ahead. And just a little teaser, the singles are out. I have more press to read than I think we will even have time for, and it's all glowing. You are about to embark on a major Northwest tour. Pleasure seekers are going nationwide. You are touring all over, including you will make a homecoming at Detroit's Rooster Tail, where you played multiple times, but this time it's hosted by Mercury Records. It's a coming out party. And then you're still going up back and forth to Canada, and your singles start charting. And this is a really big deal. So before we close out this episode, Patty, do you want to just tease us a little bit about what's to come?
The Northwest story is going to be amazing. It's a whole different ball game. And Mr. Pat O'Day, Concerts West, he's comparable to Bill Graham and any of the big ones. He handled that entire territory. And we're barreling towards such a transition in who we were even playing to in the Northwest and what happened. And with Eric Burdon and the Animals, and oh, so much to come. So much to come. Yes.
I am lucky enough, fortunate enough. I have the privilege of knowing what these stories are and what's coming. And all I can say to the listeners is buckle up. Don't even think we're close to the end yet.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. I can't
Oh,
wait.
I can't wait either. So, Patty, will you play DJ for us one more time? Because think about it, Locked in Your Love was never released. So, no
Right.
DJ had the chance or opportunity to introduce the music fans to this amazing song by the Pleasure Seekers. So, do us the favor, do us the honor.
Let's do this. Well, let's get down and funky with that hot new female band, the Pleasure Seekers, now touring across the nation with their unique sound. Spin it! Locked in your love. Sound up!
Me.